Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today we have the exciting part two episode with former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Catherine Austin Fitz, on the 2016 presidential election between celebrity business mogul Donald Trump and neocon Democrat Hillary Clinton. In part one of our interview, Catherine endorsed Donald Trump for president because of the transparency his campaign has brought to important issues facing Americans today. Now, Catherine sees this presidential campaign as a race between human and inhuman policies, as the establishment lines up behind transhumanist efforts, like microchipping the population as a step towards total dominance. Are we in the midst of a transformative election that will determine our fate for generations to come? Here we go. Former U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Catherine Austin Fitz, the Black Budget Election Gambit.
The corporate media in our country is no longer involved in journalism. They're a political special interest, no different than any lobbyist or other financial entity with a total political agenda.
We are incapable of holding people accountable for what they do. Why would someone who got killed by predatory lending, why would somebody who got hurt by the housing bubble and lost their home, why would somebody who got killed on the bailouts who lost their 401k, why would those people be for her?
You know, we see transhumanist trends rising in many aspects of modern culture. The power of technology, which should give us all the ability to build a more humane society, is instead helping a small group harvest and control the wider population. In this election, we get the chance to view these trends up close, even in controversies over voter machines being tampered with. The Trump campaign is pointing out the pernicious influence of the deep state in the political process, while the Democrat-entrenched power structure is engaged in a kind of mass media hypnosis. How will this all play out? Let's go ask Catherine Austin Fitz.
Dark Journalist will go there. The deepest issues, the hardest stories, the biggest secrets. The truth is never easy. With top guests, like former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, who is really behind this media censorship?
Internet feeds go through satellites. Who controls the satellites? It's the Pentagon.
Legendary investigator Graham Hancock.
Graham, this cataclysm must have destroyed an advanced culture in our ancient past.
It truly was an extinction-level event. It was accompanied by massive animal extinctions. It was accompanied by huge and unexplained sea level rises, and then a sudden plunge of global temperatures.
Best-selling author Jim Mars.
Jim, don't these elite corporate owners need us around to buy their GMO food? Why would they want to depopulate?
Because they are eugenicists and they believe that they need to purify the human race. And if that sounds like the Nazis, that's exactly what it is.
Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, how are we going to scale that wall of UFO secrecy?
Humans themselves are bypassing, are beginning to dismiss all of the policies of denial and lie.
Dark journalists will go there. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special fall discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll not only receive access to the complete audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, you'll also get exclusive subscriber-only content and Dark Journalist event discounts. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist. Let's get the real story in 2016.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Hello, everyone. Just around 11 days left before this election is in the history books, and it looks like they've tried everything on Trump so far, and he's still standing on coming back in states everywhere. Now, the news of Obamacare crashing and healthcare premiums starting to skyrocket is giving voters a lot of pause, along with the WikiLeaks releases on Clinton pay for play at their charitable foundation. Are we surprised? No, and it doesn't look like the media can just ignore it anymore with these new releases coming out fast and furious. So we're so lucky to have Catherine Austin Fitz here today to break it all down for us. And a quick reminder to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss any of the exciting shows we have coming up for you in November. Catherine, it's great to have you back for part two of our deep analysis of the 2016 presidential race. Now, many of my viewers, and I'm sure your Solari subscribers, have been trying to locate the deep state black budget activities in this campaign. And of course, earlier this month, we had this unusual leak of this video, which was meant to hurt Trump with women, where he's heard privately boasting over a decade ago as a private citizen. Now, I find two things interesting about this. One is that it was Billy Bush who can be heard on the tape talking to Trump. And Billy Bush is, of course, the nephew of George Bush Sr. Now, the second thing that I think is fascinating about this is that while this secret recording is going on, etc., you figure it's 11 years, it would have been forgotten. But interestingly enough, before it came out, during the summer, Billy Bush apparently referenced it to a colleague at NBC, which meant he still remembered it, and he had it. So my question is, where do you see the Bushes in regard to the activities around this election at this point?
Well, I'm assuming that the Bushes are helping the Clintons.
Right.
You know, you're up against, the Hatfield and McCoys have gotten together here. And it was really interesting because when the Bushes came out for Clinton, it was clear, you know, the problem that a lot of Republican candidates traditionally had was if you took a shot at the Clintons, you'd hit the Bushes. Because when you look at, you know, sort of their model, they're so close together and they've been close. And my perception is that, Hillary Clinton has always been very close to the Bushes. You know, they were thick as thieves on the Arkansas operations when Clinton was governor. So, I just assume that was one of the Bush's contributions to the campaign, for which they will be well and richly rewarded.
Yeah, absolutely. Watch out, Jeb. Things are looking up. Now, something I want to tie into this is our latest hostile stance against Russia. And, you know, every day it seems like we're accusing them of hacking into these Democratic operative emails and leaking them to interfere with the election. Now, there's zero evidence for this, you know, absolutely nothing. Except that some intel analysts say, well, maybe, you know, it fits their profile.
Right.
So that's not good enough. It sounds a lot like weapons of mass destruction in Iraq to me. So definitely lacking evidence. We had Secretary of State Kerry and then Vice President Biden come out and say, we will retaliate with our own cyber attacks. So it's really just amateur hour over there. And Mikhail Gorbachev actually came out and said, you know, we're nuclear powers and we should have better relations and better communications. You know, and that's very unusual for someone like that stature to come out and have to say this. What is the strategic game that we in the U.S. here are playing right now through the Obama administration?
I'm not 100% certain. I think the administration believed that if they, you know, if they slashed they played the oil card and they played the sanctions, that they would do much better than they have. I think if you're going to go to global government and global currency, you need everybody in the same model. And Putin is not, you know, he's basically for a multipolar world. He's not in their model. So at the heart of this, you're having a, you know, you're having a model debate. You're also having an economy problem because we are so dependent on weapon sales. We can't have weapon sales unless there's tension in the world. And then obviously we're going to have to go to a multipolar model. That's going to be very hard for us. How do we maintain the reserve currency and still do that? And I think there's a lot of push to either look like we're going to war or to have war with Russia. And it's probably a very bad idea.
Yes, it seems like the height of stupidity and possibly just a very dangerous distraction from the contents of the damning emails that WikiLeaks is releasing. I think that I also sense a hidden hand here, which is setting up the precedent for a media crackdown so that, you know, anyone who's trying to reveal the truth or is going off the official story is suddenly a Russian spy. Now, this is not very creative by a long shot.
Right.
Now, something else that might help us see the footprints of these covert forces operating in this election is this weaponizing of the population. Now, you've covered this in this massive outbreak of violence that happened at a Chuck E. Cheese recently. My question is, what are the tactics in play? What is the technology in play during these incidents that we're seeing?
The question is, how do we increase the intensity of the shriekometer?
Yes.
And what do we do when the war on terrorism stops working? You know, I consider the war on terrorism a government marketing program. Every time people decide to stop paying their taxes, you have a violent act and everybody says, oh, I need the government. Well, the ultimate way to, you know, the next step is to weaponize the general population.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So if you look at what's been happening in Chuck E. Cheese, it's been happening around the country. And I think what they're doing is they're prototyping the Kingsman campaign, the Kingsman technology.
Right.
And it's a way of weaponizing the general population.
Well, that is fascinating. And it's certainly a lot easier to do now that almost everyone has a smartphone on them.
Right.
So it makes them a walking antenna, basically. And of course, in the Kingsman movie, as you've pointed out, when they made everyone turn on each other through the entrainment, it actually happened during church. So making the point there that crowd control is their specialty.
Right. So right now, you're watching the elites go at each other. It's what I call the mini night things.
Mm-hmm.
One way they can resolve their differences instead to, you know, to get the general population doing it.
Right, right. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Right. So all this stuff about sex and race, it's all designed to do the divide and conquer thing. But at some point, you need something more extreme. So I look at Chuck E. Cheese and I say they're getting ready to prototype for two. They're prototyping to get ready to use that technology in 2017.
Well, they are creating attention, sometimes subtle, sometimes a trial balloon here and there of a civil war kind of atmosphere. So let's just imagine for a moment that Trump gets in, that he actually wins the election and is in office. If he made moves to uncover their secret programs or break up their monopoly of power or even lower the boom on certain aspects of the elite, they have this contingency plan to deal with that. You know, even Kerry coming out and saying Russia is interfering in the election is a kind of pretense to raise the specter of not accepting the results if Trump wins. You know, of course, the media keeps saying that he wouldn't accept it if Clinton won. But what do you think of them using this Russian situation to create a kind of election diversion?
There's no way to know. I mean, here's the thing. When my website is hacked, okay, so when I put up the wrong story or the right story,
right,
and my website is hacked, I will get a denial of service attack or hackings coming from all over the world. Now, it's usually an American entity that I believe is doing the hacking, but they're working through teams of hackers all around the world, and they're working through ISPs all around the world. So if something comes in from Russia, that doesn't mean it's from Russia, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
It could easily be from, you know, 57th and Park Avenue in New York City. So, you know, in David Talbot's wonderful book, Devil's Chessboard, he says, there's a great quote. He says, I don't want to know who shot the gun. I want to know who financed the bullet.
Right. That's a great point. Yeah.
Okay. So if, you know, the chances that the Russian government are trying to hack our election are de minimis, in my opinion. And that doesn't mean to say that somebody's not working through Russian ISPs or Russian hackers as well as people all over the world. So my guess is if the Democrats are concerned about the integrity of the election process, it's because they're concerned that they can't get enough votes through the rigging that they can do. Because right now we're talking not about who wins the vote, but who can rig the most computers.
Yeah.
And so if they think they can't rig enough, then they are going to try, or maybe they can rig it in the friendly states, but they don't think they can rig it in the heartland. So they are going to try to assert federal control of the election boards. And if they say, you know, a foreign country is doing this, then there is an excuse for the national group to assert control of the state election boards, which in my opinion is a complete violation of the Constitution. But
definitely. Well, it takes away the local control. And we have seen recently articles with the head of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson, saying, you know, that they want to get involved, again, using hacking as a pretext. So you're right on the beam there with them trying to take over the election process.
If Homeland Security takes over the state election boards, you're going to have a tax revolt.
Wow. Well, we have seen them do an overreach before.
You can't ask people to put money in a pot and that money is used to destroy them and their families. I'm not going to finance your killing me.
Right, right.
Okay. And that's what this is coming down to. And I think the big problem in America right now is you keep seeing the general population start to look at the cash flows and say, look, too much money is being wasted, you know, and we've got to bring accountability to the money, not just in how it's being organized and the bureaucracies and the need for reengineering, but we've got to use it well. And they see way too much money being wasted. So everybody's starting to finally, after 20 years, get interested in the money. But they're looking as they're watching these things and they're saying, why should I pay for the Howdy Doody show? So I'm calling it Monica Lewinsky, but I think you have a lot of serious adults not wanting to pay for Monica Lewinsky too.
Right. Well, you put that idea out there, actually, Monica Lewinsky too, and said, you know, when the media is turning up the heat like they did on that original case, it's because they're working on something else behind the scenes. In this case, it's the trillions going missing at the Pentagon, which I know you've been covering at Solari.com. And so what they need is cover and misdirection. And I think in one of the debates, actually, Trump burst their bubble a bit by suggesting he'd appoint a special prosecutor to look into the misdeeds of Hillary Clinton. And instantly, everyone in the media was, you know, just absolutely losing it, saying he has no right to say that.
Right.
But it was quite an interesting tension that happened there.
I don't, you know, in that comment, I don't think Trump was threatening her or intended to threaten her. I think what he was saying was, you know, if I was the president, we'd be enforcing laws, which means you would be in jail, which you would.
Right.
So I don't think he meant that as a threat. Now, I think he did say, you know, not as you could call it a threat. I would say it was a promise that if he was elected, he would appoint a special prosecutor to look into a variety of things. So, you know, so in that sense, you could call that a threat. I don't think what he meant, it was a practical statement. If I was the president, we'd be following the law. You know, the attorney general wouldn't be meeting with Bill and slipping him information so you could skate.
Yeah.
You know, that's obstruction of justice. It's a criminal felony. Both, you know, the attorney general could go to jail for that if it is what I think it is. So, so I don't think he meant that as a threat. I think he was just being clear. I don't think that was a threat. She would be in jail. And I think one of the reasons you're seeing the entire establishment just close forces around Clinton is because a lot of them would be in jail. And that's in fact what this is about, which was, you know, we have $21 trillion now missing from the federal government that the federal government has documented. We have $27 trillion in bailouts. That's $50 trillion. It's more than double what is the official numbers of the outstanding debt, and that's, you know, more than enough to fix the country 20 times over. There is no hope when you're running a system that is draining and sucking out that much money, and everyone in the general population understands that, whether they understand the details or not. But you know, and it's very much what Trump said when he said we spent $6 trillion on the Iraq war, and what do we have to show for it? You know, that's enough. He said that's enough money to fix up the country three times over, so, or two times over. Anyway, but that's where we are. We are in a, it's what I said, the debt finance growth model is over. So now there are no shortcuts other than reform. You're going to have to get into the money. You're going to have to change how the money works. And the establishment has run things, as you know, based on secrecy and privilege, and that includes not only a lot of things done under, you know, for national security purposes that were different or outside the law as we believe it to be, but that was just stealing. You know, there's plenty of pure criminality to go along with it, and no one wants to bring transparency to that, so they're closing rank because they're afraid.
Well, you mentioned transparency there, and of course, we've talked about how that's really what's been missing in our world. And whether it's, you know, in the media or official institutions. And I'd really have to say here that the media has been the absolute major obstacle to getting the real story. And that brings us to WikiLeaks. They've done so much, especially regarding this election and uncovering the partnering of corporate media and financial interests with the Clinton machine. they're having a major impact on the election and the campaign. So we've never seen anything like it.
Right.
And recently, the Ecuador embassy, where Assange is right now residing, they've cut off his internet access, although his organization continues to publish these important documents. And they recently reported that Hillary discussed droning Assange to eliminate him when she was Secretary of State. What does that say about WikiLeaks and the work that they're doing?
Well, we've watched for decades while countless people have been assassinated or, if not assassinated, tortured, abused, harassed, whether, you know, there's legal harassment, there's financial harassment, there's physical harassment. I mean, it was really interesting because I remember in Washington when the Monica Lewinsky one was going on, people were dropping like flies. You know, there was a professional hit on an intern in Starbucks right before she testified on the in the things associated with Lewinsky and impeachment. And you had reporters keeping Clinton death watch lists.
Oh, yeah.
Because so many people around the Clintons were dropping like flies. Anybody who presented a legal liability, and we started to see the same thing with Assange. So Assange started to disclose things, and we know there was a DN staffer who was shot in the back.
That's Seth Rich.
And Assange put out a call for $20,000 reward of his for information related to his assassination. Now, at the same time, a series of people who was being called to testify on another case related to Clinton's died when his weightlifting machine just happened to, you know, fall in his throat. Shortly after Assange came out with, I think, the reward, his attorney, there was more pressure put on Sweden to pursue their legal case, which to me looks like trumped up nothing. And then Assange's attorney was said to commit suicide by jumping in front of a train. I doubt it. And then someone was caught, a cat burglar was caught going up the side of the Ecuadorian embassy at 3 a.m. in the morning. The security got him. But there, it's clear to me that there is an effort to assassinate Assange or simply destroy his health by keeping him, in the embassy and targeted. Now, some of the issues relate to, are they letting out legitimate national security secrets? But I think the Assange has been leaking things and what I think was planning on leaking things that could hurt the whole administration. So my guess is one of the things he was planning on leaking was related to Benghazi, and another could have been relating to the DNC assassination. To me, it was an assassination. It's obvious.
Right.
So both of those could splatter very badly on the administration, particularly Benghazi. And what is very interesting about this campaign, because whoever thought this campaign would lead us to the real issues, as WikiLeaks dumps out those emails, the American people are getting an enormous education on what it takes to keep the red button from being pushed. So, you know my red button story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so let me just remind everyone.
Go ahead.
In the summer of 2000, I was giving a speech to a group of people who have a conference once a year on how to help evolve our society spiritually. And I was giving them a speech called How the Money Works on Organized Crime and explaining that the U.S. economy launders $500 billion to $1 trillion a year. That was in 1998. Of all illegal monies, it's much more now. And I asked them what would happen if we stopped being the leader in global money laundering. And they said, well, you know, we'd have trouble refinancing the deficit and the stock market would go down. So our IRAs and 401ks would go down. So I said, okay, well, let's pretend there's a big red button up here on the lectern. And if you push that button, you can stop all hard narcotics trafficking in your neighborhood, your county, your state, thus offending the people who control $500 billion to $1 trillion a year and the accumulated capital thereon. And out of 100 people dedicated to evolving our society spiritually, only one would push the button. So I said to the other 99, why would you not push the button? They said, we don't want our 401ks and IRAs to go down. We don't want our government checks to stop, and we don't want our taxes to go up. And so, I always say that Goldwater ran for president. He said, look, you know, we have 6% of the people and 50% of the resources. To keep this going, we're going to have to be tough and drop a lot of bombs and, you know, be difficult, have a big military. And the American people said, oh, no, we're nice, good Christians. So Jimmy Carter came along. And he said, okay, well, we're going to have to cut back. We're going to, you know, we're going to sit in front of the fireplace with our sweater and we're going to shiver. And the American people said, no, we don't want to cut back. So the Bushes came along and said, you know something, you're all a good Christians. Here's your check. Don't ask questions. And we said, okie dokie.
Exactly.
Now, that's grossly exaggerated. But, you know, the reality is we've been keeping the red button from being pushed with more and more force and more covert force and more covert stuff. And in the meantime, while we've been doing that, trillions of dollars is disappearing. And as you know, my number one issue is, where's the money? How do we get it back? Because essentially what we did, starting with Monica Lewinsky one, was we've had a financial coup d'etat. And 51 trillion, you know, it depends. I used to say it was 40 trillion, but now with the Department of Defense last year losing 9.5 trillion, it's up to probably $50 trillion. So let's just, for round numbers, let's say $50 trillion. As you know, that will pay for a lot of UFOs, Daniel.
I have no doubt about it.
So we're missing $50 trillion, and that is essentially more than all of our retirement savings. So when people stand up and say, oh, we can't afford, you know, this pension fund, or we can't afford a COLA on Social Security, or we can't afford healthcare, well, that's because we just disappeared $51 trillion. And one of the reasons that everybody's gathering ranks around Hillary Clinton is they're the ones who stole it and they're the ones who took it. And some of them know where it is and they don't want to give it back.
Yeah.
And we're coming into a big negotiation next year between the establishment and the general population, which is, you know, you can't keep playing this game with just printing money or issuing more treasury securities. So this is all going to come down to, you know, how are we going to allocate money in the federal budget between the creditors, the military, and 3,100 counties?
So this is the heart of the issue. No one wants to get thrown overboard. And this brings us to the potential of Trump's presidency. And he represents all of their fears in a way, because he's fighting the machine now. And they've all turned on him. You know, they all want to take him down. The Republicans, the Clinton machine, the Bush cartel, they need to bring him down. And they will use every trick to get him at this point.
Right.
And so for people who can't make up their mind about Trump, this level of opposition from every corner of a corrupt establishment should give us some idea of what he represents, which is the end to this monopoly on power. So that establishment sees him as the ultimate threat.
Well, I would say it this way. I would say they're trying not to push the red button. He's talking about turning the red button green, and they're afraid he's going to push the red button.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, knowing your red button story, it really makes sense.
So I would explain this squabble as essentially the red button coming, you know, the red button issue coming to the head. And it's good that you read the productivity, because it all comes down to, are we going to depopulate? Are we going to become a police state so we can harvest everybody? Or are we going to change?
Right. These are the choices.
Right. Since you and I would prefer change, it helps to understand the deeper cash flows on what's happening.
Well, this is the crux of the matter, and you've pointed it out. The debt growth model is over, and 2017 is that crucial year where they'll have to deal with the new reality. So we will see some real changes here, and they want Clinton in the driver's seat to oversee who gets thrown overboard.
Right, right. So that they're not thrown overboard. They want to make sure they're not thrown overboard.
Right, right. And that's the motivation going on here. And when we come back, we'll talk about what that will look like and how movements like Brexit and the Trump movement are really challenging for the global power structure and what they might do to stop it. Final round here of part two coming up with Catherine Austin Fitz. Stay with us.
Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Subscribe now and you'll have access to the complete audio archives to download or stream at your convenience. Receive advanced updates and discounts on Dark Journalist events. Enjoy exclusive subscriber-only content. Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special fall discount available for just $39 for one full year. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
I As they were sitting there filming, a little saucer came from, I say little saucer, it was a saucer, came flying over their heads, put down three little landing gear and landed right out on the dry lake bed. And they picked up their cameras and started over toward it, filming as they went. And when they got in fairly close to it, it lifted up, put the gear back in the wheel wells, tipped up, and took off at a great rate of speed.
Dark journalist will go there.
The power of technology, which should give us all the ability to build a more humane society, is instead helping a small group harvest and control the wider population.
Hidden technology.
So in other words, the possibility exists that you have here a machine that is manipulating magnetic fields on a planetary scale that has nothing to do with particle physics.
The black budget.
But there's no such thing as getting away from the corruption because it is literally, it is now integrated into every economy in the globe.
Geoengineering.
I'm talking about right down to the DNA level. Imagine that you have now put microprocessors and sensors along with everything else into every human body.
For more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries, visit darkjournalist.com today. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with the former U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine is the publisher of the Solari Report, a very innovative financial analysis and geopolitical tracker on vital events that you need to know about. Catherine made news right here on this show in part one, endorsing Donald Trump for president, citing his courage for bringing these transparency issues into the 2016 campaign over the media-favored candidate Hillary Clinton. Now, Catherine, I want to get into Brexit for a moment, and that did seem to take the UK media and the whole world by surprise, really. That changed everything, and of course, the rise of the Trump campaign here in the US is like our own version of Brexit, with its rejection of globalism and the whole one-world government theme. How do you see these trends being related?
Well, here's what I would say it's related to, because I sent you the second quarter wrap-up.
Yes.
And it was funny. I was in a wonderful meeting where there were a fair amount of establishment in another context, not U.S., another country. And I was listening to what they had to say, their fears of Brexit and their fears of Clinton not winning the election. And what I realized is we are in a period where we very much need productivity growth in the economy. And we have been increasing labor productivity for corporations in ways that are highly destructive of human productivity overall. Okay. And you see this when you look at the government money, because you have companies who are doing better and better and better in terms of their earnings or their fundamental productivity. And that's being financed with more and more government debt money and thousands of ways. You and I could have 10 shows on this. I'd love it, but
that would be great.
It gets us deeply into the U.S. federal budget and how the money works. So if you have a whole pie and you have one group that's looking better and better, but the whole pie is shrinking, at some point something's got to give.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was hearing was the folks don't understand that what the general population is trying to tell them is that you are destroying productivity. And if we're going to an inhuman civilization, you're going to destroy it completely. So we need to talk about all the productivity, not just corporate labor productivity. And we need to deal with all these issues. Now, the very good news, Daniel, is there is a way out. I mean, there is a way to make the pie bigger and much bigger, particularly with new technology. Okay. You know that we can bring the energy price down a lot, and we have, and we're going to keep doing so. So there's a lot of good news on the horizon, but it means we all have to change. Now, for 500 years, the G7 has been, the developed world has been on the central banking warfare model. It can't work anymore if we're going to globalize. So we need a new model. That's a big, and the leadership has a vision of a highly centralized model, and it will work as long as they have complete control. But that complete control comes with an end of humanity, an end of civilization, and an end of the imagination, you know, except for Mr. Global and his three friends. So the general population is rejecting the destruction of humanity. And here's the thing, even if humanity comes at a little cost of corporate labor productivity, we didn't come here to be shareholders.
Yeah.
You know, we came here to, you know,
Live a real life in the real world.
I don't know. We came here to, you know,
not be a statistic.
Well, I came here. Whatever I came here for was not to be livestock.
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, that's my whole fight with the federal government was really between me and the boys. It wasn't me and the federal government. It was, am I a slave or am I free? I thought I was free. They thought I was a slave. We're still debating that, you know. There's tension there. There's creative tension going on there. But my attitude is I'm free. So.
Well, I think you've proved the point that you're free by surviving all the operations and charges that they threw at you.
Right. It's still very expensive.
I'm sure it is. Well, they don't like to lose a public battle like that. And I think that brings us to the very heart of the choice in this presidential campaign.
So that's what this election is about. Are we going to choose the criminal or are we going to choose a wild-ass unknown?
Excellent point.
I am never going to vote for the criminal. You are never going to get me to do that. That's impossible.
Well, let's have you speak directly to someone who's voting out there. And I've talked to intelligent people who are going to vote Democrat, and I'm stunned in this election. Of course, I'm in Boston, so I can't be too surprised.
And the Clintons have made a lot of money for the Harvard endowment. So.
Oh, that's definitely true. In my conversations, and regardless of who anyone is voting for, I never make that an issue. But some of the points defending her sound like the strangest rationalizations. You know, like, well, her crimes aren't too bad, or aren't they just mean to her, or there's so much misogyny against her. It's hard to be a woman president. I mean, this is really a thing.
This has nothing to do with sex.
Definitely.
I can't tell you how many people are voting for Trump who would have voted for Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Yes, I can see that.
And they disagree with Bernie Sanders on all of his policies, but they think he's an honest man.
Well, this is the thing. This is what this election year has brought us, this amazing wave of populism, you know, from Sanders, from Trump, both of them, really.
Right.
And the great thing about these movements, regardless of whether or not you agree with them, is that they are genuine movements. You know, these are the candidates that people wanted. And these candidates engender a real feeling of change to their supporters. You know, I mean, think of Trump versus like Mitt Romney's campaign, for example. You know, here's real issues and a charismatic figure, if controversial. But remember after the last election, that picture of Mitt Romney pumping his own gas, you know, after he lost. And no one stopped or wanted to see him. You know, he really had been forced on them. So there was no feeling there. Now, when we think of Trump and the level of feeling his followers have for him, that's a powerful connection that Clinton doesn't have. And again, you know, some of his followers even understand that, you know, he's a very bombastic kind of character.
You look at Trump and you think, oh, my God, you know, this is going to be terrifying. And now I go back to the Molotov cocktail. Terrifying to me is better than efficient in this situation. But, you know, we live in a world where we need far more collaboration. So, but I think the anger against Hillary, I think the anger against Hillary Clinton is people are sick of watching affirmative action used to justify putting people in positions who are not anywhere near as competent as the people we could get.
Right. So for people falling for the I'm with her political manipulation, what would you say to them? You know the power structure in the government very well, having been inside there. You know, Wall Street influence. You even know many of the establishment figures themselves. And, of course, I have a question here about former Fed chief Alan Greenspan, so remind me to get to that.
Don't pick on Hillary Clinton when we could kill Alan Greenspan. You know, if we could only kill one person, Alan's
right. Right. Well, he's a better candidate for prosecution. We'll keep that in mind. So, I mean, in terms of how they've been drinking the MSNBC Kool-Aid on this, you know, the entrainment about Hillary, and the caricature of evil Trump versus good Hillary. And, you know, Hillary's been fighting for families. By the way, that's hard to do from the board at Walmart, which she was on for many years. But, you know, she's a real champion for social justice.
Well, but this is entrainment. It has to be entrainment. Because here's the thing. You're against the financial coup d'etat. You're against the money being stolen. You're against, you know, using the State Department to racketeer for your personal self and your friends. You're against genocide in Haiti. You're against all these things. You're just for the person who did it. I mean, the American, every year for many, many years, and I thank Obama because he gave me a vacation from this. My whole life, every 4 years, I watch America lose their mind and try and explain to me why I should vote for somebody who either killed one of my parents or tried to kill me. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and it's really funny. Why would you try and pursue? It's like, now I understand what it's like to live in Argentina with, you know.
And these are Bushes and Clintons you're talking about here.
Right. And so we are incapable of holding people accountable for what they do. I don't, and that's not, the Clintons are doing what they do because it works. Hillary Clinton wants to die a billionaire. She's doing what works. You know?
It works. Right.
And she would say, well, she's effective. And she is. But why would the people who, you know, had their kid go into a slave labor camp to work for the Department of Defense? Or why would someone who got killed by predatory lending, why would somebody who got hurt by the housing bubble and lost their home, why would somebody who got killed on the bailouts who lost their 401k, why would those people be for her? They seem to be incapable of connecting her. You know, now I know you deal with it because I deal with it every day too. I have subscribers who, you know, I'm some unsubscribing because I'm from Hillary Clinton and she's the first woman and you should, you know, be for her. And now I will tell you, there are very, if I was the establishment, I would want a woman president too.
Yes.
There are powerful, powerful reasons globally why a woman president would be fantastic, both for business marketing, projecting soft power. There are thousands of arguments for having a woman. So why they didn't go out and get a woman who would be acceptable to the population, I don't know. But they didn't. So there are very powerful reasons for having a woman. But all I can tell you is I think America has lost its mind. And the interesting thing that's happened, and I can't explain it without entrainment, although maybe I'm too optimistic about the human race. What is very, very interesting here, Daniel, is I think that the technology and its impact on the general population has now caused the establishment to lose their mind. So you're watching a feedback loop where the establishment has literally forgotten what's true because they're being so bombarded by all this stuff or watching how easily they can manipulate the general population.
So it's like their own entrainment is bleeding into their thought process.
Right.
Fascinating.
And the thing that scares me is we have a cycle of disrespect. And it's not good because there's so many great members of the establishment. Basically, what we need is for the honest, competent people in the establishment to get back in control of the establishment.
Right.
And the bureaucracy in Washington.
And that is not what we're seeing.
No.
We've got the opposite going on, actually. But also, here's what's hard to fathom. And I've followed the media for years, you know, and I've worked for them before. How this mainstream media could throw themselves so completely in with the Hillary Clinton campaign to the point of looking absurd, like a total propaganda machine. You know, the relentless bashing of Trump, even when there's good news, exposes them completely. Why would they destroy what's left of their dignity like that?
Well, I think they're truly scared. And I think they're scared of multiple things. You know, there's legitimate things to be afraid of. You know, so there are legitimate things to be afraid of. There are also things to be afraid of that aren't legitimate. And I think you're seeing a combination of the two. And whatever the reason, whether it's the legitimate reasons or the reasons that are self-serving, you know, their business model is to make sure the current model stays in control. And so generally they've decided to just get Mikey. And the problem is that then that the general population, here's the thing. I said it before. If what you're proposing is an inhuman civilization, then I'd rather just collapse it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so let's have this fight now, because where you're going is not going to work. And there's no point in delaying that. If you want to chip my children, I saw the greatest, the tweet of the year. I get a tweet from a guy, and it's, he's sending out the article that says that the NIH has approved mixing human DNA with animal DNA. I don't know if you've seen that story.
Oh, they've been hinting at it.
Now, they're trying to justify it by saying it's just for research. So the combinations will be kept in the lab. Ho, ho, ho. So, but his cover line when he tweets it out is, please just nuke us now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Catherine, right. Amazing insights on what's happening here. Thank you so much. We'll wrap up part two, but we'll have to do part three because I still have so many questions for you. And we'll do it just for subscribers who will get it in their inbox next week. And this is the perfect time to subscribe at darkjournalist.com. The latest Solari report Catherine has out is called Productivity, Prosperity, and the Popsicle Index. Just amazing stuff. Catherine, thank you so much.
Thanks, Daniel. You have a great day. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode with former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Catherine Austin Fitz on the Black Budget Election Gambit. You can find more deep interviews, documentaries, and special reports at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Subscribe to our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows.